You're listening to the Packernet Podcast Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Packernet Podcast. I am your host and resident panelist, as always, Ryan Schlipp. Check us out online, packernet.com. Find me on Twitter, pack_datam. Well, today on the old docket, I want to take a look, as we kind of did yesterday, looking at the Lions and the Vikings and the Bears, oh my, at the Green Bay Packers depth chart. We've kind of dibbled and dabbled a little bit here and there as far as who starts and who doesn't and long shots and everything, especially looking at the rookies. But I just want to take today and really kind of hammer it down. And hammer it down is the wrong way to put it because we're not going to figure it out. I guess I just want to look at it. Theorize. Just have a conversation. Can we just have a conversation? We can't even talk anymore in this country, you know? Right? Our subject? All right, I'm sorry. It's just a joke. But a good way to get that started, I sent it out as a question. Facebook, Patreon, Twitter. Sorry for Instagram. I should start talking to Jacob and be like, can you do it? Because I don't know how to do it. But let's take a look because I had solicited some hot takes. And I kind of wanted it just so when I get into it, we've kind of explored all the other options. You know what I mean? I don't want to miss anything. So just give me the craziest thing you can think of. First comment is from Andy on Facebook. He says, Sean Ryan will start on the offensive line somewhere for every game this year. That's actually a really interesting and a take that I can completely understand. It's one of those things that we've seen a lot of guys do. It's kind of like, I don't know if it was Royce. I don't think it was Royce. But a little bit. Kind of like John Runyon, kind of like Royce Newman. John Runyon, I think, is probably the best example. John Runyon played actually the most snaps of anybody along the offensive line. It's such a turnstile. It's one of the things that I was listening to JJ's podcast yesterday with Coach Hahn, and they talked about one of the complications in particular with run blocking is that everything's so unstable. Guys go in, guys go out. John Runyon played 1,109 snaps. Now, ideally, five guys on the offensive line play the exact same amount of snaps. You don't rotate offensive linemen. You just don't. I mean, I'm sure there are certain situations, teams, especially in college and high school, whatever, where you do. In professional football, you got five guys and they just stay out there. We didn't have that. So John Runyon played the most snaps. He played two snaps at left tackle, one snap at right guard, one snap at right tackle, 1,105 at left guard. Outside of center, he played everywhere on the offensive line. Royce played two different positions. He was at right guard primarily, but also played left guard. Lucas Patrick is another one. Now, he's kind of our Swiss Army knife to begin with, but it's that same kind of thing. He's primarily our center, 822 snaps, but he also played 57 at left guard, 88 at right guard. So I think I can see that, especially if what we're ultimately saying is that we really like the guy. He's going to, even at full strength, he's going to be a guy that wins a starting spot. Because in that case, what we're really saying is he's going to be playing, say, out of position, whether that be right tackle possibly, or somewhere else to kind of fill in. And then as people come back, he slowly filters back to where they really want him to be. But ultimately, he's going to stay on the field. And I think that makes sense. And I've kind of talked about that with all these young guys. It's a really big benefit, the fact that we've got people hurt. I hate it. I hate that David Bakhtiari has got this lingering thing, if we even want to call it lingering. I'm going to, because I'm just paranoid. The fact that Elgton Jenkins is hurt, I hate all of it. But it is always a benefit to give people the opportunity to play. And so some of these guys will be thrust onto the field because of injury, whereas maybe if not for the injury, they wouldn't be. Now, maybe that's not even entirely true. Let's just say Elgton Jenkins is our right tackle. And with Elgton Jenkins being out, Yosh is going to be our right tackle. In that case, the spot is being filled by somebody else. And it's not somebody that plays guard or center the rest of the year so that, well, now we got to backfill that spot. No, it's just somebody that sits on the bench that's going to come in and play tackle. But I think that's a good take. Stephen Bradley says Amari Rodgers will end up being wide receiver one. I asked for hot takes, and that is a hot take. I was just thinking about that actually as I lumbered downstairs, which is what I call it when I first wake up in the morning. It is kind of a funny, why the coordination is so far off. Does that happen to you too? You turn into like a baby. I'm literally ping-ponging off the walls in the morning like a drunk. But anyways, I was thinking about Amari Rodgers. Nothing weird. I'm just saying, I was wondering about his position on the team. And it kind of sounds like I'm pushing for Amari to be a really good football player because I'm defending him so much. But really, all I'm saying is the hate is silly. But it's still a very, very tough road for him. Not only because there's a massive pile of guys fighting for a very small piece of the pie, but it's also tough because Randall is still there. And I just have a real hard time saying Amari takes that spot unless we're saying Amari makes it as a boundary receiver, which I really doubt because we know pretty much every other guy outside of the two I just named are boundary guys. So there's a real tough guy. There's not much competition in the slot, but it's just the fact that he's the second guy there. So I think Amari likely takes a step. I think Amari likely gets involved more often. In fact, it makes a lot of sense for the Packers to want to involve him more because who on this team knows the offense at wide receiver? If it's a matter of the Packers wanting somebody they can trust, it's not Christian Watson. It's not Sammy Watkins. It's not Juwan Winfrey. It's not Romeo Doubs. It's not Samori Toure. So we got Lazard. We got Cobb. We got Amari. And I guess Malik Taylor, but I don't know. So when the guys that you know you can trust, and I'm using air quotes here, are Randall, Lazard, and Amari, it would make sense that you want to get Amari in the mix. He's one of the guys already in year two that you're leaning on saying, look, man, you know the playbook. At least you freaking better. Especially early on, we're going to lean on you to understand what to do and get out there and do it. But I still think, you know, one of the things that they're going to have to do, and again, Coach Hahn talked about this when you talk about limited offensive line, you lean on scheme a little bit. Same, I think, with wide receiver. We're going to have to lean on creativity a tad. Now, that does work to Amari's favor because he's a creative kind of guy, but it doesn't really lend itself to him being like a true number one receiver. I mean, I guess if you point to a guy like Deebo Samuel, you could say, excuse me, what about him? Okay, fair enough. But generally, the big slot people that you can put in the backfield types aren't usually going to be your number ones. But I don't know, maybe. I'll say that is the hottest of hot takes. I'm going to sell on that one, but fair enough. But again, I do think it's kind of interesting. Wide receiver is so unbelievably wide open. You could put just about any combination, and I would pretty much buy it. I mean, we know Lazard is going to have a pretty big role, at least that would make the most sense. It's possible that you could say, well, no, Sammy's going to be great and Christian's going to be great and Amari's going to take a step and Dobbs is going to be great and Toure is going to be great and there's no role for Lazard anymore. That would be unbelievably unlikely. But, you know, if you're an ultra optimist about the draft picks and everything, fine. But outside of being quite positive that Alan Lazard has a big role, I don't know much. And I don't even know what big role means. I know that Aaron Rodgers trusts him. I know the Packers trust him. So he's going to be on the field a ton. But I also know he's one of the, I'm trying not to be mean because I really like Lazard, but in terms of ability, I mean, mentally, Lazard is the guy. I mean, he gets it. He and Randall, you know. But you talk about athletic upside and everything else, you're dealing with really young, really talented, really hungry football players. And if they can hit the ground running, it's going to be a heck of a competition. So wide receiver is way wide open in my mind. Kind of repeating myself, but I think the intelligent thing to do is to lean on the guys that have already been there. That's where the safe money's at. And technically, Amari does fall into that category. But I think the biggest problem with Amari is there's sort of a timeline. Early on, you lean on the veterans. And then as the season goes on, you start to lean a little more toward the young guys. And so Amari kind of gets kind of piled on in both directions. On one hand, you got Lazard and Randall, who already know more, who already have Rodgers trust, who already kind of bury Amari in that regard. And then as he slowly starts to work his way up and get that trust and all those things, you've also got Watson, Dobbs, and Toure, and a bunch of other guys, Sammy potentially, that are learning the offense, that are getting a rapport with Rodgers, that are starting to probably pass Amari. But again, I don't know. Nico says, AJ Dillon will emerge as the beast we all want him to be. I kind of agree, but the funny thing is, I don't think that's about A.J. Dillon. And I'm not saying Nico's saying it is. I'm just putting my own thought on that particular take. I think that depends on the offensive line. And I don't think that happens early, again, because of the cohesion thing. We've got, you know, Bakhtiari just coming back. And what is he coming back to? A brand new group of guys. Probably still have Runyon there. Josh Myers is there, but those two don't know each other. Probably have a new right guard and then a potentially different right tackle until Elton comes back. But who knows? You might have Sean Ryan at left guard. You might have Elton Jenkins at right guard, left guard. You might have Zach Tom at left guard. But the biggest thing is going to be, I really think this is going to be a really fantastic competition. And Rashid Walker, by the way, should be talked about. I am not, he wasn't high on my board because he didn't have great anything. The stats just weren't great. I know the film guys watched him and are like, he's fantastic. I listened to somebody the other day who said he had a second round grade on him. Late second round grade on Rashid Walker blew me away. It's also crazy because I've heard people say that they've had second round grades on Enigbar. Again, they fell for a reason, and I can see it with Rashid Walker, but it is worth noting. I mean, the guy is an absolute freakish monster. And the assumption is, well, he's you know, my thought at least, is that he's kind of a Yosh Nijman. You know, he'll maybe over time hone his craft and be kind of a backup replacement tackle, but I wonder what he would do in this guard competition. I know 6'6", you know, feels like a tackle. But you look at, for example, the Minnesota Vikings and Ezra Cleveland. I kept saying the same thing about Ezra Cleveland. You drafted a 6'6" tackle. I'm assuming you want him to play tackle, and they put him in at guard. And I'm like, I don't think he's going to stay there. I don't know why. I was just obsessed with 6'6" guys, especially a little bit slender. He just doesn't look like a guard to me. He looks like a tackle. Well, all 6'6", 312 pounds of him has been playing left guard and at a, you know, he's been fairly decent. I mean, he's not elite, but he's playing decent. It's not impossible that Rashid, you know, goes from the tackle spot to the guard spot, thrives, especially as just a big, angry dude. So it's going to be fun. We're going to hear a lot of different combinations, and it'll be interesting to see what happens. But I think as far as A.J. Dillon and even Aaron Jones, we know they're really good running backs. But I think their upside is capped by the offensive line. I think that's true of every running back. Your true potential is going to be ultimately determined by how good your offensive line is. Now, some running backs can overcome it more so than others. Aaron Jones, I think, does a really good job of, if there's anything there at all, he'll find it, he'll get through it. But there still has to be something there. And for every running back, if you have more holes, bigger holes, you're gonna do better. You know, and then there's also the ability of getting up to the next level. It's one thing to, you know, if everybody along the offensive line handles the defensive line, great. But there's a linebacker waiting right there to smoke somebody, you know, then it's okay, it's a 3-yard gain, cool. 5-yard gain if it's A.J. Dillon dragging the linebacker for a couple more yards. But, you know, really getting this full thing together, getting the defensive line handled, getting up to the next level and getting to the linebackers, really giving them a full lane to run through and be able to do all that. The point being, I think you're right, and I think they're going to hit their stride a little bit later, assuming they all stay on the field. If you start seeing guys go down and you got this continued rotation, you know, Zach Tom comes on for the first time week 7, you know, after Elton just came back, and it's like, all right, they're finally getting it, and then somebody else goes down, and then Zach has to come in. You know what I mean? It's just this continued rotation. Ideally, we really early on get our 5 guys, and they stay together, they work together, and by at that point, by the end of the season, in the postseason, these guys are clicking. And if you think about it, it really is that way with the best offensive lines we've had with the Packers, whether that's back in the 90s or back around when we won the Super Bowl in 2010 or any of the other really good lines. It was generally the same 5 guys all the time. You might have one guy kind of coming in, and usually that guy would thrive because he's coming in with 4 established people. They get him up to speed, and that guy rolls. So that's my thought. But either way, I do think there should be improved offensive line play. And so I'm hoping that impacts the run game pretty substantially. Kurt over on Patreon says, clearly, Kurt Benkert will be the starting quarterback. Tell you what, Kurt, you shouldn't joke like that, man. I know it's a joke, but if it happens, I'm blaming you. Goose says, I'm bringing the magma. Newman starts the year at right tackle and possibly stays there if they want to keep Jenkins inside for the year. I like that because nobody's talking about that, and maybe. The biggest issue, obviously, is that they never did that at all last year, and there were opportunities. They had the opportunity, if they thought that he was a good fit at tackle, to put him at tackle, and they didn't. He played 1,084 snaps, all of them at guard, three of them left guard, 1,081 at right guard. He was a former tackle. He's 6'6", 310, so he's built like a tackle. Again, that's the Rashid thing where you would think 6'6", 310 is not guard build, although I don't know if that's what he is these days. I mean, I'm sure he's still 6'6". I doubt they gave him that much of a haircut, but maybe they had him put on weight. I don't know. But the only reason I say that it could be possible is because I think during training camp, that's the time when they kind of reset and they throw everybody out there to do everything. And if they give Royce a shot, because there's so much competition going on, maybe they just keep him at guard and let him compete with the other guys to try to win that guard spot, which I think kind of makes sense. If I had to guess, I mean, again, you want to let everybody try everything to find a way to win a job. But I think the first priority is let him stay at right guard because he's got a lot of competition and they want to give him first crack at winning his own job, you know, just out of respect for him. Now, here's the caveat. If he doesn't win that job, if let's say, so let's take a look at it. Right now, our starting offensive line is David Bakhtiari, John Runyon, Josh Myers, Royce Newman, and then we have right tackle that is unknown. But let's say it's Yash or whatever. Let's just say that's what it is. The young guys coming in are fighting to win these jobs. Let's say they know for a fact, Zach Tom, Sean Ryan, Rashid Walker, somebody comes in and they are better than Royce Newman. That's been established. It might make sense to move Royce over to the right tackle spot and let him compete with Yash just to see. Right, you lost that job. That's done. We know Sean is not going to be playing tackle, but we absolutely want him to be a guard. He's a stud, and he's a great fit at right guard. We love it. Maybe we do move Royce over to the tackle group and be like, go compete with them and see what you can do. You know, maybe Zach Tom is still fighting for that spot. You got Rashid, you got Yash, and now they add Royce to the competition and just see what he can do. He does have familiarity with the offensive system to give him a little bit of a leg up. Again, he played tackle in college, so he's got that going for him. I think he's kind of a good build for it. Now, he still has to win that job, and it's a long shot having just lost the guard shot job. But I'll, could see it. I mean, to be fair, Zach Tom is a super long shot, probably a better fit at guard, and he's got a lot to refine, and the Packers probably don't trust him, especially at tackle. So week one would be difficult. Same thing for Rashid. And so really, it's going to be a Royce Newman, Yash Nyman competition. And Yash did a great job, but it's still Yash. And I don't mean that to sound insulting, but he should have the ability to beat Yash. Royce was a fourth-round pick for a reason. Yash was an undrafted free agent for a reason. In terms of ability, if Royce could get if he can meet his full potential, he has a real shot at winning that job. So that would be interesting. And again, this is why I ask these questions, because these are things I would not have even explored had I just sat down and been like, all right, let's talk about it. But that's also what's fun about, again, the offensive line, because I really think they're going to throw all these guys out there and be like, win. Just go win something. I mean, we know what David Bakhtiari is doing. And again, aside from that, I think Josh Myers is the only guy that's kind of locked in. John Runyon, I think the Packers really like him. He does a good enough job, but with the amount of competition that's there, and being that it's like, well, yeah, he's a real good pass blocker, but the run blocking isn't fantastic. Not that that matters as much, but if you can get a guy that can do both, they're going to go with that guy. And again, if it's Zach Tom, if it's Sean Ryan, if it's whoever, Rashid Walker, and they come out and they can pass block and run block, guess what? John Runyon just lost his job. So mix and match and see what you can do, because there's guard and tackle are wide open. Go win a spot. And I think generally they're going to let everybody do everything. Steve says, I think there's still way too many days ahead of us to put people at certain positions. First and most important to me is, what is the true health status of Bakhtiari, Jenkins, Cobb, Alexander, and Tonyan? That's five starters that might not be ready opening day, even though some tried to come back at the end of last year. Well, as far as why explore is because that's what we do. It's silly to do this, just like it's silly to do mock drafts and talk about the draft prior to the draft, just like it's silly to talk about the competition because we don't know what's going to happen for the Vikings, Lions, and Bears, and who starts and who sits and who's good and who's bad. Just like it's silly to project who's going to, you know, what our record's going to be, and all of the, everything I do here is silly, Steve. All right, on Saturday when we talk about the game on Sunday and what we think is going to happen is kind of silly because we don't know. But I do it anyways. So that's the first part. It's kind of like when people say, the only thing that matters is a Super Bowl. It's like, I would love to watch you watch football in week three and throw an absolute temper tantrum when they lose to somebody like the Rams. Like, why are you mad? This isn't the Super Bowl. I thought the only thing that mattered was a Super Bowl. This game has no implication. I'm sure they try to make something up about, well, this is a Super Bowl. They'll find a way to make an excuse, but the fact of the matter is they know. Everybody knows you care. Yes, it's silly to be talking about stuff this early. It's silly for you to be listening to a Packers podcast. Didn't you know it was May? We don't have football for a long time. What are you doing here? Why am I sitting in an empty basement by myself talking about the Packers? I don't know. I don't have an answer to that question, Steve, but we do it. But as far as health, I don't want to put too little into it, but I also don't want to put too much into it. Guys get hurt every single year all the time. Aaron Rodgers has been hurt like 50 times. Aaron Jones has been hurt a billion times. Pretty much every single starting person on this team has gone out. I mean, Josh Myers, you didn't mention, he was out the entire year. And so I think sometimes we forget that injuries can be more serious. It's not just a matter of you come back and everything's fine, but I think sometimes we put a little bit too much into it as well. We're worried that David Bakhtiari's career is over. Why? Do we worry that Josh Myers' career is over, or are we saying he's too young, he'll bounce back? Because maybe he won't. I don't know. Same with Jair. There's a lot of concern that, well, he'll never come back to his full self because he was injured last year. Well, King got hurt every year, and the next year he came back in full health until he got hurt again. But he came back same guy. In fact, last year was his best year somehow. So, I mean, it's something to keep an eye on, especially as you get older, I guess. But I just think injuries happen. It is what it is. They'll be back, and most of these guys should be back starting week one. I'm not going to address it now because I haven't really fully looked into everybody. And I kind of want to do that and get a better answer on that just to make sure I'm not missing anything. But I'm not super worried about anybody's. I think maybe Tonyan might also be expected to be out for a while. But again, I don't know. I want to try to get a more solid timeline of when people are expected to be back, if they're not expected to be back. But again, guys like Bakhtiari and whatnot, I think there's just a lot of fear that I'll just say is sort of unusual. That is to say, we don't usually say these things about injuries. Again, Josh Myers. I don't know if it's because of him continually getting re-injured, which I think was real. I think the biggest thing with Bakhtiari was just bad management. We kept trying to push him back. He needed to just rest. And that was the thing that he mentioned in the article. His knee kept getting better and better and better. It just needed to, and as soon as he put weight on it, and we kept seeing those videos of him like, oh, look at him running around. Look how good he looks. Every time he's doing those drills, running around, looking great, it's damaging his knee. And the issue wasn't even that his knee wasn't healed. It was healed, but there couldn't have been 100% healed because it kept filling with fluid. In other words, there's still issues with his knee. And whenever he put weight on it, his knee was like, all right, dummy, we got to protect it now. It started freaking out and panicking and putting a bunch of liquid around his knee. And so it would swell too much. We brought him back against the Lions a little bit too early. What happened? His knee swelled. He couldn't play in the playoffs. So again, assuming he hasn't been like playing beach volleyball all offseason, I think we'll be okay. Anyways, I want to take a break here. We got a bunch of stuff on Twitter to get through. I kind of wanted to do it myself. We also need to look at the what we know so far about the Green Bay Packers schedule. So we'll do that really quickly on the other side of the break. Don't forget, we've got our one final GoFundMe still sitting out there. That is to help Drew get his seizure service dog. He was diagnosed with epilepsy when he was 15 years old. He's now 34, looking to get the help that he needs. He's got a very serious version of epilepsy, causes seizures where he loses consciousness and convulses severely. And so we're just looking to help a fellow Packer fan and PackerNet listener get the help that he needs. So if you got anything, $1, $5, $3, doesn't matter what it is, pinned to the top of my Twitter is Drew's GoFundMe. Anything you can give would be greatly appreciated. That's it. We'll take a break and we'll be right back. We all have smartphones, and we all know they're pretty amazing, but they also can be amazingly distracting, especially when we're around other people. So U.S. Cellular wants us to reset our relationship with our phones by putting down our phones for five. That's right, a company that sells phones wants us to put down our phones. And to see what we find, learn more at uscellular.com/builtforus.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
5-1-0, declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
So as it stands, and none of this has been officially confirmed, but there's been a lot of leaks and those kinds of things. I think the biggest way that these things leak is what happens first before the NFL tells the public is they start telling teams. And they tell teams early so that they can start making reservations at hotels and all these kinds of things before everybody fills them up and everything else. And so the first thing is you start maybe getting leaks from players or from people that are in teams, but you also have some kind of connections at hotels. And I think that's where some of these local Packer guys kind of get things, is they know people at hotels, whether that's a connection that they built or maybe they just have a buddy there coincidentally or whatever. But you'll start to see, for example, a bunch of people from New England, maybe specifically the New England Patriots team, start to book a lot around week four. And so although there's nothing official, I think it's safe to say week four, somebody said, and so you'll have massive amounts of reservations on certain weeks. So week four, you got a bunch of reservations. Week six, you get a bunch of people from New York. And that's kind of how you can figure out what the day is, probably. I mean, I guess if it's Sunday, Monday, maybe not. But if they start booking up a bunch for like Thursday, that's a one way you can know. But here is the presumed schedule as best as I know. Maybe we know a little bit more than this at this point. But week two is expected to be the first home game for the Green Bay Packers. And it's Sunday Night Football, and it's against the Chicago Bears. So pretty excited about that, getting the Bears, and especially getting them early. I know we've got a bunch of young guys too, which is tough. I mean, anytime you go up against a young team, it's benefit early, and it's tough for us also. But the as I said, the only possible way the Bears scare me is if Justin Fields is kind of hitting his stride, and I doubt that happens week two. I'm not going to go through the whole matchup thing all over again, but it would be ideal to be able to hit their stride early. And so getting a couple layups in the first couple weeks is ideal. I don't know what week one is yet. I would not be surprised if it's the Vikings again. I do see the Vikings later in the season, but there's still... Well, let's go through the rest of it and see what we can figure out. Week four against the Patriots, I don't know, home or away. Week five is the game against the Giants in London. Week six is the Jets. Week 10 is the Cowboys. Week 11 is the Titans. That's Thursday night football. Week 15 is the Rams. That's Monday night football. So they got a Thursday night and then a Monday night. Oh, and by the way, we learned that there is no bye week, if you didn't notice. After London, week five is week six against the Jets. So they've got a game the very next week. I made a joke. I hope it's the Bears. I'll take the Jets. It's possible the Jets kind of get better and take a step. In fact, they probably should. They might not be that bad of a team. We'll have to keep an eye on that. But that could be a tough one, you know, coming all the way back from London and then playing the Jets. At the very least, it better be at home. Because if we go on the road against the Jets, that's horrible. Week 15, the Rams Monday Night Football. Week 16 is at Miami Dolphins. Somebody had mentioned that is, I don't know if it's Christmas Day or Christmas Eve or it's right around Christmas, but week 16 in Miami. And Christmas is on a Sunday, so there you go. That probably is going to be that. So unlikely I'll be going to that game. Week 17, Vikings. Week 18, Lions. So generally you get the flurry of divisional opponents early and then the flurry late. So you got 17 and 18 ending with the Vikings Lions. So we don't know weeks 1, 3, 7, 8, 9, 12. And then I thought we... I thought we knew when the bye was, but I think people assumed it was week 6 because it was after London, but it's not. So there's a bye mixed in here somewhere. And we do know, obviously, it's not week 1. If I had to guess, week 1 will be another divisional opponent. I could be wrong. Other opponents that we have that are on the schedule that we don't know about yet. Buffalo Bills, Philadelphia Eagles, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Tampa Bay might be a week 1 game. That kind of feels like, you know, we've started with, for example, the Saints week 1. So I could see Tampa week 1. I don't think it would be the Bills. Could maybe be Washington, but it doesn't feel right. Because I think they want to open with a bang. So I would lean toward Vikings or Buccaneers. Maybe Lions. I would love that, but I don't think so.
And Eagles just feels like a mid-season thing. We've played them a bunch, and usually it feels like it's around like week 7-ish. So that would be my guess. So I think week one is usually a tough matchup. It just is. You know, when we played the Bears, it was when the Bears were you know, rip-roaring hot. We played the Vikings a bunch. Again, we've played the Saints. We got annihilated last year by the Saints. So we'll see. That's my guess. It would make sense, though, that it would be either the Vikings or the Lions, just because we play them both back-to-back at the end of the season. So it would feel kind of unlikely if it was in that sort of 7-8-9 stretch where we're playing them both again. So, I mean, it could be one of them's in that stretch, one of them's week 3. There's also 12, 13, 14, but again, we're getting real close to 17, 18. So it'd be weird to be Vikings week 14 and 17. I don't know. I'm thinking out loud here. Anyways, also in the news before we move on entirely, you've got the Packers signed tight end Eli Wolf, 6'4", 236, 2020 undrafted free agent from Georgia, obviously. Spent time with Baltimore and Indy, didn't play any regular season snaps. Seems to be a pretty good blocker, so I'm not going to dig too much into it because I don't have super high expectations. I know I shouldn't play that game because we've been down this road, but it is what it is. Plus, it's just not what we're talking about today. But so you know, it happened. We signed a tight end. All right, here are the Twitter takes. Deepak says, Toure is the kick returner. Amari Rodgers is the sleeper wide receiver on the team this year. Kind of already talked about Amari. I think that's a more fair way to say it as opposed to number one. I think my bigger issue with this take is Toure being the kick returner. Because I tend to think he's going to be the punt returner. That's not to say he can't do both. Maybe he does end up doing both, but in college he was a punt returner and not a kick returner. And again, those are two different skill sets. There are people that can do both, but I think his skill set is more of a punt returner, so I think that's what he's going to do for us. We'll see. I'm sure he's going to compete at both, and if he can win both, great. JJ just posted his sort of like a 53, I guess. I didn't count it to see if that's what it was, but might as well look at it. As far as starters go, a lot of not surprises. Aaron Rodgers is the quarterback. That might be the biggest surprise. AJ Dillon, that was a joke. Don't start. AJ Dillon, Aaron Jones, running back, wide receivers. He has number one, and I'm going to put him in order, assuming that you put him in order. Number one guy, he has Randall Cobb, then Alan Lazard, then Sammy Watkins, then Amari Rodgers, then Christian Watson, then Romeo Doubs. These are the guys that he put likely to make the roster. As far as the next tier of guys that are right there, Malik Taylor, Samori Toure. At tight end, Mercedes Lewis, Josiah DeGuara. Well, he has Robert Tonyan in next, but there's the injury. So to start the season, Mercedes Lewis, Josiah DeGuara, Dominique Daphne, and Tyler Davis. He's got a big pile of tight ends there. Tackles, David Bakhtiari, Yash Nyman. Or that's left tackle, excuse me. So David Bakhtiari, John Runyon, left guard, Josh Myers at center. He does have Sean Ryan at right guard. However, he has Elgton Jenkins at right tackle. And the backup right tackle is Sean Ryan. So presumably Sean Ryan would be the starting right tackle to start the season. So that would put Royce as the starting right guard, who loses that job once Elgton comes back. Defensive tackles, Kenny Dean and Jaron to start, with Devontae Wyatt and TJ Slayton after. Outside linebacker, Rashawn and Preston, followed by Garvin, then Kingsley, then Randy Ramsey. Linebackers, Devondre, then Quay. Safeties, Adrian Amos, Darnell Savage. Corners, Jair Stokes, Rasul. Specialists, Mason Crosby, Pat O'Donnell. And then as far as the snapper, who knows? Joe says, Benkert takes the number two job. I would say there's almost no chance of that pending a trade of Jordan Love, and maybe that's what you're saying. I don't think he's going to win the job. I think they drafted Jordan Love in the first round. He is the guy, period, end of conversation. He's the guy until he's not the guy. And on the day that he's not the guy, he's leaving. There's no chance in the world their first round pick sits number three on their depth chart. That just is never going to happen. I know there's a winking face there. He's goofing around, but I'm just, for your information on where I stand on that, never in a million years. King of Positivity, which is a great name for this take, Amari Rodgers, wide receiver one. So again, a lot of people real high on Amari. I just think, if nothing else, based on his position and his skill set, it seems impossible to me. Impossible is the wrong way to say it, but it's such a massive climb. Right, if he reaches his ceiling compared to if Christian Watson hits his ceiling, who's the number one? It's Watson. He's going to be the number one guy on the outside. He's got the speed, the size, all that stuff. Amari at his ceiling is doing what? He's a slot guy running jet sweeps and slant routes, wide receiver screens, you know? Jeremy says, Watkins, wide receiver one, week one. Is that a hot take? That's actually a good question. Is that a hot take? It could be, but it also shouldn't be. As far as talent, as far as what he should be, he should easily be the best wide receiver on this team, but we also know what he's been the last couple years. But as far as the competition, you know, again, you're going up against Lazard. This is a team with a void at that wide receiver one position. He has everything you could ever want. It's the reason he was taken number 4 overall in the draft. The size, the speed, all that. It shouldn't be a hot take, but it probably is, because there's also a question of, does he even make the team? Because you know we're not going to be cutting rookies. And, you know, we could talk about practice squad all you want, but, you know, I don't know about Toure necessarily, but I know there's no chance Dobbs and Christian Watson are put on the practice squad because they're going to get stolen instantly. So they're on the team, as is Randall, presumably. I mean, I guess we should explore. Can you imagine the drama from the media about the Packers doing everything they can to just make Aaron Rodgers mad? They can do it, though. I don't think they would, but I don't know, man. I think they want the veteran nature of Randall Cobb there, plus, you know, Rodgers likes him, so I'm sure that plays somewhat of a factor, but it's worth at least exploring whether or not Randall Cobb is a lock. I mean, is the fact that he's Rodgers' friend make him a lock? Because if he wasn't Rodgers' friend, you're talking about a 31-year-old guy that hasn't really been a top-tier wide receiver in like 5 years, who's playing in the slot when we just drafted a slot guy that I'm sure they would love to push into that spot. So let's say Amari's just killing it right now. Amari is just the guy. He's really breaking out. So you're going to want him on the field a ton, primarily in the slot. Now, granted, if you're doing 4 wide receivers, which I'm guessing we're not going to do a ton of, you could put Randall and he both in the slot. And you could probably put Amari in the backfield. You can mix it up so that they both end up being on the field. But if I'm really looking at this as a guy that's about to turn 32, who, again, has not really produced, we're paying him $4 million. We could save, you know, like 1.3, I think, by shedding him. 1.4-ish. Oh, no, I'm wrong. That's what we would save next year. We would actually, oh, no, we can't. I guess we can't cut him. All right, never mind. They restructured him to death, so it's impossible to cut him. I mean, it's not impossible, but we would have to pay to cut him, which isn't going to happen. But I wanted to, so he's a lock. All right, so Randall's a lock. Lazard is a lock. So, I mean, it's just a tough spot for Amari. And they have to get ultra creative to make him a factor on the field. I mean, on a consistent volume basis. I mean, sure, once in a while you can put him in the backfield. Once in a while you can put him in the slot. Once in a while you can run some stuff with him. But is he going to be on the field consistent enough to where we're saying he's wide receiver one? What's he going to be doing? We're either benching Randall Cobb, or he's going to be out on the boundary taking jobs away from Christian Watson, Samori Toure, Romeo Doubs, Alan Lazard. I don't think that's going to happen. Anyways, I don't know how we ended up back on Amari. I forget how we got here. We were talking about Watkins and something happened. Oh, the amount of guys that are going to be on the team. Right. That's where... It's crazy. Talking about Randall to see if he was a lock, and then I forgot we weren't talking about Amari anymore. But yes, he is a lock. Watson is a lock. Lazard is a lock. Amari is a lock. Dobbs is a lock. Samori, not necessarily, but, you know, I don't know, man. I don't know. We will see. I'll stick with my original take. It shouldn't be a hot take, but I'll say that it probably is. I'm going to interject here for 1 second. I just saw this via Adam Schefter, and since we were talking about it a minute ago, might as well expand on it. Key dates for the 2022 season. Thursday, August 4th is a Hall of Fame game. Jaguars-Raiders, worst Hall of Fame game ever. Thursday, September 8th, NFL season opener. Sunday, January 8th, final day of the regular season. Sunday, February 12th, 2023, Super Bowl at State Farm Stadium in Glendale, Arizona. Hopefully that date is relevant to Packers fans this year. Alfonso says top 5 defense in the NFL if the safeties stay healthy. Fair enough. UConn Cornelius says KB Anento is someone to keep an eye on. Third-year converted wide receiver with good physical traits, fractured his foot in a punt drill at his rookie camp, which slowed his progress. He balled at camp last year, though, and I thought he was close to a roster spot. Expect him on the 53. I think that's fair. I mean, the depth outside of the top guys is not massive. I mean, you got Rasul, you got Stokes, you got Jair. After that, who's the top guy? It's probably Ento. I mean, it could be Shamar. I don't know. That's probably it. So if we're just talking about makes the roster, yeah, I don't see any reason to argue with that. Bagley Bag says Lions sweep. That's cute and also has nothing to do with the depth chart, but thanks for playing. Monty says Kingsley is edge 3 going into week 1. That's one of those things that is a hot take, but I think most people, if we put that to a vote, would agree. But I still think it is kind of a hot take because, you know, he put the week one thing on there. I think if they put a roster depth chart together today, he's not edge three, which I'm sure a lot of people would disagree, but he's not. He hasn't earned it. But at the same time, I think there is an expectation for him to win that spot. I think it's very similar to guys like Devontae Wyatt. I think out of respect right now, you've got Lowry, Kenny, and Jerron Reed. Now, I'm sure if you look at PFF or Our Lads or any of that stuff, Devontae Wyatt's already in that spot. I think there's an expectation for him to win, but I don't think he's in that spot today. Quay might be a little bit different. I don't think, I mean, again, respect kind of goes a long way. Maybe, you know, when we start day one of it probably is. Maybe day one, Chris Barnes probably is in that number one wide or inside linebacker spot. But I think at that point, we're kind of getting into formalities. In other words, not only is there an expectation for you to win, but we're literally just going to hand you that spot after like a couple days of practice because we know you're going to be that guy and we need you to be getting the snaps. So, Chris, here you go. Here's like one day. Congratulations. You did it. You lost the job. Goodbye. Quay, you did it. Good job, buddy. You did absolutely nothing, but it doesn't matter because you will be that guy. I'm sorry. You cannot fail. That's not an option. But and again, I think that'll be largely a source of disappointment for a lot of Packer fans. We want Sean Ryan and Zach Tom to start offensive line day one. We want Christian Watson and Dobbs and Toure to be like the guys day one. We want Walker and Wyatt and Inigbar and all these guys to just day one be right there playing, starting. And I don't think that's going to happen. Again, Christian might get pushed a little bit out of necessity, but I still think it's going to be Lazard and those guys as far as quote-unquote number one. I think Wyatt's going to be pushed, but I don't know that he's automatic. And I kind of think that's the case with Kingsley. I think they're going to, it's going to be Rashawn and it's going to be Preston, but then I think it's going to be Garvin and Randy Ramsey. With the expectation of Kingsley, we expect you to take that number three spot. The question is he going to be there by week one? It's also a question of how do you really, I guess, gauge that? I guess the easiest way to gauge it is when Preston and Rashawn come off the field, who are the two guys that go on? But then how do you gauge kind of who's three and who's four? If he's not on the field when those guys come off, that kind of sucks. And we talk about him as a rotational pass rusher. But at the same time, we need four guys at least because they do just pull them and put the next two guys in. Doesn't matter if it's first down, second down, third down, passing down, running down. You have to be ready to play. And that could be part of the complication with Kingsley is, you know, we can call him a rotational pass rusher all we want, but at the end of the day, he has to just go out and play. We don't have that level of depth where we can say, nah, you just sit here and we'll wait until, you know, third and 12. And then you just go run out there. I mean, if that's the case, we're talking about him being edge five. Because we need two guys that can go out first down, second, that can do several series, you know? You can play multiple downs until those guys get a breather and can go back out. MB says Toure makes the 53. It's probably a hotter take than a lot of people would want to admit, but I think it is. He's got, again, a tough batch of wide receivers to compete with. It's really just a numbers game at this point. He's one of the few guys that you could probably stash on the practice squad and get away with it. Maybe. But also maybe not. That's going to be the biggest complication for Toure is, do they feel comfortable that if we put him on the practice squad, somebody else isn't going to steal him? Can you imagine if the Bears just plucked him or something and put him right on the field? That would sting so bad. Dara says, Sammy Watkins, wide receiver one to start the season. Kind of already addressed that. Again, it shouldn't be a hot take. He's the most talented guy on the field. I mean, with the exception maybe of Christian Watson in terms of raw talent, but he's got all that and the experience as a veteran wide receiver. He should win the job. There's no question about it. Will he? I don't know, but he should. Markey says, Devontae Wyatt starts day one. In order to be a starter, that means you go out there with the original crew. If we're going out with three defensive linemen, you're one of the three. If you're going out with two and nickel, it's you and Kenny. That's what would make you a starter. So, again, another one that a lot of people are going to say, that's not a hot take. I'm going to say that it is. In fact, I would bet that doesn't happen. And if it does, that's huge, huge. And that's the biggest thing we need to recognize. I think a lot of fans are going to look at it and say, if Devontae Wyatt doesn't start, it's a bad sign. If he does start, it's expected. That's wrong. If he doesn't start, it's not a bad sign. If he does start, that is massive. Because again, they don't put guys out there that they don't trust. They've got Dean. They like Dean. I know you maybe don't like Dean. That doesn't matter. You're not the coach. They really, really like Dean Lowry. There's a massive gap between what the Packers think of Dean Lowry and what fans think of Dean Lowry. they really like the guy. They know they, I mean, I think Dean is just a really intelligent guy that understands exactly what his role is, and they love that. And again, they brought in Geron also, a veteran, a guy that just knows what's up. He's been around a long time. I think he's massively overhyped as far as his PFF grade and everything else. He's not good. If we look at our defensive line in terms of grades, Kenny Clark has a 75 overall grade, Lowry 66, Reed 54. However, again, veteran, intelligent, trustworthy, you know, assignment sound. And I think especially for defensive coordinators, a lot of time there's a tendency to just say, I need you to do the job I give you. Because if there's one guy not doing their job, it kind of ruins the whole thing. And the risk of putting a guy like Devontae Wyatt out there who's not doing his job correctly because he just doesn't know exactly what he's supposed to do yet, that can really damage this defense's ability to work as a cohesive unit. Now, again, he's in a decent spot where he's got a lot of guys around him that can kind of cover for him, I guess you could say. But again, if he starts day one, in my opinion, that is a massive nod to Devontae Wyatt. Wyatt says A.J. Dillon starts a playoff game and Aaron Jones is healthy. Presumably, we're just talking about A.J. Dillon officially dethrones Aaron Jones as the number one running back. I think we're already seeing that. You know, at the beginning of the season, Aaron Jones was getting all the carries. A.J. Dillon was just kind of barely peppered in. I just kind of flipping through. I'm not going week by week, but I just jumped to the end of the season, week 14. Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon were both playing. Maybe injuries were still a factor at this point. I don't know. I'm not going to go back and look at all that. But A.J. Dillon, 15 carries. Aaron Jones, 5. That did flip-flop by week 15, but again, you're kind of seeing it. It's that whole light bulb flickering thing. Again, in week 17, A.J. Dillon, 14 carries. Aaron Jones, 8. That was against the Minnesota Vikings. And that was the last game, I think, that they played together in the regular season. And then against San Francisco, it was 12-7 in favor of Aaron Jones. So again, we're kind of starting to see. So it used to be Aaron Jones. First of all, A.J. Dillon wasn't even on the field. Then A.J. Dillon kind of takes that number two role. But by the end of the season, he's kind of coming in as the number one occasionally. It's kind of alternating between the two. So yeah, if there's a point at which A.J. Dillon is the primary, that's kind of already been the case. I think the question is, will that be more officially efficient? And I think it should be. I mean, even if, and I said this last year and it didn't end up happening, I don't believe, but you could easily see a situation where even if Aaron Jones is sort of the quote-unquote number one, A.J. Dillon is still the guy with more carries, right? Because Aaron Jones is used in more ways as a receiver. You know, you could split him out. You can do all these different things. I could absolutely see that being the case, as I, again, said last year. But I think this year, hopefully, we start to see more of that. Zach Deitch says Royce Newman gets beaten out for the right guard spot by one of the rookies. Again, depending on who you're talking to, some people say that's not a hot take. But again, remember, you got to start with the guys that were there last year. We know Royce can do it. We have no idea what the other guys can do and can't do. So as much as we might not want to admit it, the safe money at right guard is probably Royce, especially early in the season. Maybe not by the end of the season, but you know, week one, that's probably the safe money. Would I put money on it? No, I would not. Vince Lombardi says, hot take, Kylan Hill will be the kickoff returner number one. I think that's entirely possible. I mean, he was that guy for a long time through week 8 last year. Didn't grade out super well, but was kind of just average, I guess. Longest was 41 yards, averaged about 20. Again, ideally, you're getting to about 25. But yeah, I could absolutely see that. David Hillier says we have the number one defense by week 3. All right, fair enough. Joel Midget says Tyler Davis is tight end 3 over JD. You guys know what I think about Josiah, so I'm going to say that ain't happening. Certainly a hot take, though, when you factor in, and maybe you're saying Tonyan is injured, I don't know, but Tonyan, Mercedes Lewis, Josiah DeGuara, he's not only leapfrogging Josiah, he's leapfrogging Dominique Daphne. So, I don't know, I mean, every once in a while you get, well, not every once in a while, every year all the time, there's sort of deep depth chart guys that get a bunch of hype. I've never heard Tyler Davis hype before, but maybe that's a thing, I don't know. As a receiver last year, he had 5 targets, 4 receptions, 35 yards. So, you know, maybe. That tweet is followed exactly by Pack But Rasul Douglas Return Season. It's a long Twitter handle. Tyler Davis is tight end 1 at some point this season. I'm just going to go ahead and put the kibosh on that one. Is this a thing? Because I'll be honest with you, until right this moment, I forgot Tyler Davis existed. And it sounds like there's kind of a big Tyler Davis hype train. Is that a thing I missed? Somebody's got to fill me in on this. I've never I've never noticed there's a big Tyler Davis fan club, but I think that's interesting. Finally, Bruce says, we won't go get a veteran wide receiver. You're probably right, Bruce. You're probably right. Anyways, summarizing with a real quick once-over, quarterback, obviously not a lot of controversy there. Aaron Rodgers is the guy. Jordan Love is number two. Presumably, Kurt Bankert keeps that number three spot. I don't see a whole lot of shaking up there. The one exception being, well, a couple exceptions being Jordan Love gets traded, which I don't think will happen, but we'll see. And carrying two quarterbacks would not be great for Kurt Bankert. Running back, again, not a lot of controversy. Aaron Jones, A.J. Dillon, who's sort of number one, number two is not a super important question to me. I really like Kylan Hill. I really like Patrick Taylor. We'll see how that all goes, along with guys like B.J. Baylor and Tyler Goodson. We do a really good job finding these undrafted free agents that come in and can contribute, so it'll be a fun little back-of-the-roster competition, I guess. Tight end, again, it's kind of the same guys. Tonyan, Mercedes, Josiah, and Dominique. I know the Packers really like Dominique Daphne. I think he does a good job. He's one of those guys where, again, when you talk about pushing people that you want to succeed, primarily because we drafted him early, you're looking at guys like Josiah. But I think Dominique's the guy that's not supposed to do well, but he just does everything right. And so it's like, well, we gotta put him out there because he's just good at football. I don't know what to do. But really the only question is, to me, although Tyler Davis, you know, maybe becomes a tight end one, I don't know. Biggest question is, what is Josiah going to do, right? Because Tonyan, we know, is probably the number one guy, depending any kind of big fall off, whenever he decides to come back. Mercedes is Mercedes, which, you know, presumably is last year, but I say that every year, I don't know. But I don't really see a whole lot of change in what he's going to be doing. And I think Dominique is just what he is. I mean, not to say he can't grow, because he can and he probably will, but as far as his ceiling, I don't know where exactly that is. But Josiah is the guy we're kind of sitting, tapping our foot, going, come on, man. Come on. Here we go. Big roll. Take that number one spot. You can do this. We'll see. And again, offensive line, we talked a ton about David Bakhtiari. Presumably, John Runyon, I think, wins that left guard spot. Josh Myers is locked in. Again, Royce is kind of safe money, but not super safe. But I mean, if you had to pick, that would be, you know, the best odds probably, but very, very closely followed by Sean Ryan and or Zach Tom and or Rashid Walker, with the right tackle spot being, again, my guess is Yosh. And I know that's the most boring lineup for everybody, is to say it's going to be Bakhtiari, Runyon, Myers, Royce, and then Yosh. But we're just talking early in the season, and I think the biggest question mark is going to be Royce. Because I think there's a real good chance that one of the three guys we drafted takes that right guard spot. Possibly right tackle too, but that's my thought. And again, it could be Royce that takes the right tackle spot. I don't know. And then wide receiver, I think Lazard and Randall are kind of the guys that are locked in there. The question is, who's going to kind of be thrust into that quote-unquote number one spot? And it's kind of a stupid term, but Allen Lazard and Randall Cobb have roles. And their roles aren't necessarily to be that guy. You know, they're not the field stretchers, they just don't have that. I think that comes down to Watson and Watkins. Now, again, I think there is going to be a heavy rotation, a lot of guys doing a lot of different things. You're going to have a premium on creativity and different personnel groupings and everything else. But if we had to use the lazy terminology of X receiver, number one receiver, whether that's just based on snap counts or whatever, well, in that case, it's probably Lazard. But I really think that, again, we're talking about the pushing thing. I think Sammy Watkins today kind of is seen as that guy. I think that's why they brought him in. But I think they're going to push real heavily for it to be Watson. The question is, can he do it? Can he be ready? Can he be up to speed? And that is a mental thing. And again, the benefit is really, really intelligent guy. I think it was like a 38 on the Wonderlic or whatever. Just extremely intelligent, the ability to absorb and process information. And that's going to be important, not only because you're a rookie, but you're coming out of SDSU. Or NDSU, I don't know why I keep mixing those up. Probably the DSU being the same, and also the same words. But can you get up to speed quickly? We know they're going to be schemed heavily. We know they're going to get Christian Watson involved. We assume if Sammy Watkins is on the field, he's going to be involved. And maybe Sammy gets the primary nod early, but Christian gets mixed in here and there, kind of like I've been saying with Amari, where we just find ways to get him involved early on. And maybe that's just what we do early on. It's just a heavy mix of different personnel grouping. Because, I mean, really, you can do a lot of fun stuff when you look at the different types of players. Guys like Randall that are so different than guys like Lazard, who are so different than guys like Christian Watson, who's so different from guys like Amari, who's so different from guys like Sammy Watkins, who's so different than a guy like Malik Taylor, who's so very different than a guy like Romeo Doubs, who's quite different than a guy like Samori Toure. you start putting, you know, a couple of these guys in a bunch with Christian Watson on the other side or whatever, the crazy stuff that you can do. You know, I mean, if you've got Christian Watson on one side, the other side is Lazard and Amari and Sammy Watkins. Let's just say, what are you even thinking this is? Because you've got speed over there with Sammy. You've got a field stretcher that can get down the field quickly. But you've also got Christian Watson who can get down the field here. But you're also looking at it saying, you're throwing it to Amari, aren't you, with Lazard and Sammy blocking, who are literally like the two best blocking wide receivers in the entire NFL. But again, what if we're not? And by the way, maybe we're running the ball. That's also possible. Or throwing to the, you know, tight end or something. I don't know. Actually, I don't think that's possible. We got too many people. But the point is, lots of options. And again, defensively, my thought is early on, Dean, Kenny, Jerron. And I think Devontae gets, you know, it's a rotation. So it's kind of silly to talk about starter, this, that, or the other. There's going to be a rotation. Some guys stay out longer than others. You're constantly revolving door kind of a thing. But I do think Wyatt is sort of that number four. And I think his snap counts start to improve and increase as he shows more and more that he's not just the physical specimen that we know he is and can be a really scary pass rusher, but a guy that really understands on a snap-to-snap, down-to-down basis exactly what you're supposed to be doing. Linebacker, I do think Devondre and Quay are immediately out there, and I think getting Quay up to speed is going to be one of their top priorities because, again, you're out there. Week one, day one, you're ready to go. I mean, we've got a little bit of a grace period because Devondre can handle it if you're not up to speed, but I think that's where we're at. Outside linebacker, again, Rashawn and Preston, and I do think probably like Garvin and Kingsley can be, see, and again, that's tough because we got to trust you to be out there and be ready to play. It could be Ramsey and Garvin, I don't know, but I really think they want to push him to be one of those guys in the rotation, not to be number five, to occasionally go out situationally, because that would really suck. Corner, again, I'm still, I know it's basically assumed at this point it's Rasul and Stokes with Jair in the slot, but I still struggle with that. I have such a hard time with that, and I guess I don't know why, but I just do. The other question is, when there's two wide receivers, somebody's coming off. It can't be Jair. It's either Rasul or Stokes. Maybe it's going to be a rotation there as well, but otherwise, there's really nothing to figure out. Safety is Darnell Savage, Adrian Amos. Who's the third safety? I don't know if it matters as much because I think that position is largely taken by Quay Walker. So I don't think we have to worry about a third safety as much anymore. And then special teams, I'm completely fine with Mason and Pat O'Donnell, and who cares? I mean, it's not who cares who the long snapper is, but I don't have a preference, and I don't personally care. Just find a guy that can do it. But anyways, I got to get up out of here. Thanks you to everyone who gave their thoughts, their comments, their insights. You folks have yourselves a fantastic day. I will talk to you tomorrow. Have a good one. Bye-bye.